can we make you a personalized podcast playlist?
Head on over to thehostquiz.com, answer 7 easy questions, and get a unique to your hosting biz playlist of thanks for visiting podcast episodes to help you smash your goals.
The action plan and strategies that will elevate your business is one quick quiz and a set of headphones away. Again, head to thehostquiz.com and take our quick hosting quiz today. Hi, I'm Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are
Thanks for visiting.
And this is Success Unlocked, Season 1. Let us explain.
So our mission here at Thanks for Visiting is to unite and equip short-term rental hosts to create unique and safe spaces-turned businesses, to strengthen guest and community trust so we can ensure the longevity and profitability of independent hosts. And of course, to bring more host voices to the forefront.
It's one thing to hear our perspective on short-term rental business building strategies, but we wanted to bring more value to you by introducing other incredible hosts to the Thanks for Visiting stage.
So we are excited to present to you this season of Success Unlocked, where our Hosting Business Mastery Membership coaches will discuss operations, social media, unique builds, co-hosting strategies, and so much more.
Today's show, Vacation Ventures, is hosted by Michael Hicks. He has over 20 years experience in various aspects of real estate with 300 deals under his belt. Michael began his career in new construction and is still building homes today, just a little bit differently.
In 2016, Michael and his wife Tia moved into short-term rentals by converting one of their duplexes. They never looked back and began building unique short-term rentals in 2020. From shipping container homes, tree houses, to A-frames. Their homes have been viewed over 5 million times on various social media platforms, been featured in multiple magazines, and on A&E's Living Smaller TV series. So let's get to it.
All right, guys, Michael Hicks here with my good friend Charlie Ike in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Charlie has a restaurant down the street from a home we built a few years ago. That's how we met. We've become friends. We're getting ready to open a pizza restaurant together. Lots of cool things going. I recently listened to a book called Unreasonable Hospitality. And when I heard the title and when I started listening to the book, the first person I thought of was Charlie. And so I wanted to have him on here and talk a little bit about that. But before we get into that, I want Charlie to come on and tell a little bit about himself and his background in the restaurant industry.
Great. Hey, Mike, good to see you, buddy. And thanks for inviting me here. And prior to me introducing myself, when you called me and said, hey, man, I want you to listen to this book, it made me think of you. I downloaded the book and I listened to it, and it was a giant compliment. So I appreciate that, because when I was listening to this book, I thought, man, I'm nowhere near that great, because the guy that put that book together is he's on the top of the top 1% of customer service for sure. And I think we're all just trying to be better every day. But yes, like Mike said, we met, three, four years ago now. And Mike was a customer in the restaurant. We hit it off and became friends. I've been doing this. I'll be 55 on my next birthday. And I kind of got roped into this lifestyle from my father, who owned a restaurant in Libertyville, Illinois. About the time I was old enough to bus tables, I guess I was probably somewhere between 10 and 12. I got my first taste of the service business in my dad's restaurant, and it was a smaller place. VFW did fish fries on Fridays, which is a big thing up north, and just kind of fell in love with it. And throughout school, didn't really know for sure what I wanted to do. I thought at one point in time I wanted to be a lawyer, and I certainly am glad that I didn't take that route. Not that there's anything wrong with lawyers, but I'm sure that I'm much more happier in customer service than I would have been litigating in a courtroom. But went to work for a national chain for a Pizza Hut right out of high school, and stayed with them for about 8 years. And when I left, I was an area director. And then I just dabbled around in some other restaurants. And about 25 years ago now, I had an opportunity to buy in as a partner with a restaurant group that I was doing some consulting for. And since that time, I've owned 8 restaurants. And I sold food for a food service company at one point in time during that spell, and love the business most days, not every day, but most days genuinely love the business. and what we can bring to it, and the involvement with customers and the service aspect and the creativity of menus, the staff, and pretty much all aspects of it. And it's kind of what I do. It's who I am. Now, you see, when I send an email, it says Charlie Ike, husband, father, restaurant guy. And it's what I do and what I love.
Well, I think it has to be important to you, and you have to have a love for it to do it. And there's not many people that want to dive out into the restaurant industry. You know, the failure rate's high, and you've done it multiple times. So I think that speaks a lot to me. What I see in a failing business is more of lack of preparation, lack of knowledge, lack of understanding of what they're getting into, more than, hey, this was a restaurant that failed. I think those numbers are skewed because, you know, grandmother decided she wanted to open a restaurant down the street because she makes good lasagna. You've had your share of hardship. I've seen it, you know. So,
indeed.
And you've overcome it. But you've taken a location that's not on the main drag. It's kind of, you know, off a little bit, but it's near a boat ramp, and you just kind of created a feel around it. Talk a little bit about the fall of Cheeburger, and the invent of River Drifters.
So I had a restaurant downtown Chattanooga, directly across from the world's largest freshwater aquarium, and it was a very popular place. It when we first got there, the restaurant was struggling quite a bit. The wrong people were in place. It was one of those scenarios you were just speaking of where the family thought, man, I bet it would be really fun to have a restaurant. He was a pharmacist, and his wife and two very good friends to this day, they're wonderful people. She was a kindergarten teacher, and they thought, man, wouldn't it be fun if we owned a restaurant? And so they put a bunch of money in there, and probably the tune of around $500,000 at the time. And they opened up, it was a 50s diner milkshake burger type place. And they soon realized that, man, this is really not fun. This is a lot of, restaurant business is a unique beast. There's a situation every day. It could be anything from a walk-in cooler going out to catching somebody stealing to you name it. If it can go wrong, it's going to eventually happen in the restaurant business. And I went in there on a 6-week contract with them to do some consulting, and ended up buying the restaurant out from them completely. And the restaurant was built in a historic building that had been there since 1876. And just through natural occurrences, there was some degradation on the upstairs of the premise. And we think that it was related to a cement floor that was poured there at one point in time prior to us arriving. But for whatever reason, the restaurant physically, literally collapsed. We kind of had a little bit of indication that there was a large problem, and we had shut the restaurant down about 48 hours before that happened. But yes, it literally.
How long had you operated there before that took place?
I had been there in an ownership position. I believe it was right at about 17 years. And when you do, I don't know, anything for that long, it becomes an extension of you, if you will. It was what we were known for in the industry. We had a lot of friends that owned restaurants, managed restaurants, and that they tied that restaurant to us, to my wife and I and our family, as part of our identity. It's kind of who we were. It became, and I hate to use the word because it's a little corny, but it became an iconic place, an institutionalized place. It was a place when you went to Tennessee in Chattanooga, if you visited the aquarium, there's a high chance that you were going to come see us. And we had a good local following as well, but we were definitely dependent on the tourist business in the summertime. And so we were almost like losing a child, if you will. You know, we went through a lot of emotions. It was, I'll never forget it. It was, I was there when it happened. Actually got it on video. I could see that the building was shifting, and my truck was parked next to it where I parked every day. And I had an engineer who was out there, and he specialized in historic buildings, and he was coming in from Knoxville to visit with us and see what we could do to prevent this from happening. And there's a long story about litigation and stuff with the building owner, because we were renting the property. We didn't own it. So I can't get into specific details about it because we're still there 6 years later. But I moved my truck, and as I was walking back around the front of the building, I could physically see that something big is getting ready to happen. And I told the guys that were standing there, I said, guys, watch out. It's fixing to go. And I probably used a few more colorful words than that I'm going to keep from the podcast right now. I'd guarantee I did, honestly. But so we all moved out of the way. And sure enough, man, that thing just came crashing down in a big cloud of dust. And I just, my heart was ripped out. You know, you spent 17 years investing your heart and soul to build a business to where it was sustaining our family and it was a profitable business. When we took it over, it was losing money. And you're proud of it. It's like, I don't know, it's like having a kid that moves out at 18 and you're just kind of, you got that empty nest syndrome. We were like, all right, what are we going to do? So I like to ride motorcycles when I'm not working. And I was out on the road that my current restaurant is on because it's a very popular popular area for motorcycle riding in East Tennessee. And I saw this little place on the side of the road there, and it had a four lease or four. Made the call to the agent and looked at it the next day with my wife. And I said, you know, it's kind of in an out there location, kind of off the beaten path. It's clearly going to be a destination spot. I'm not sure we'll ever do the business we were doing downtown, but it's going to be a fun experience. We didn't need to make a ton of money. Our house was paid for. And I thought, you know, I'll probably be the cook and you'll probably be the server, but we're going to have a good time. And 5 years later, it'll be 5 years, actually, July 2nd, since we opened. We're rocking. We're rocking and rolling, man. We've built it far beyond. We've exceeded the expectation we had. I'll put it like that.
Well, and that's why I wanted you to tell that story, because I feel like it leans on the culture that you built around Cheeburger, Cheeburger, and the following that you had from there. I think that rolled over into the new restaurant, and that's because of the culture and the environment that you've built around your space. So tell us a little bit about that. What makes you unreasonably hospitable?
Well, I think the key thing that you're talking about there is culture. And every place you work, every restaurant you eat at, every business out there has rules. And rules govern a behavior, but they don't foster a culture or your ideals or your values or your principles. And I think I'm a customer service freak personally. And I think if you go into whatever you're doing for yourself, with the pride you have in yourself or the values that you establish for yourself, that's what helps create the culture in your staff and in your crew and those people that are around you. So, for example, let's just use a chain place. We'll just call TGI Fridays. There's nothing wrong with TGI Fridays at all. But they have a specific step of rules that you have to institute when you work there, just say as a server. You're going to do a meet and greet. You're going to ask the customer what they'd like to drink. You're going to suggest an appetizer. You're going to go away. You're going to come back with their drinks and the appetizer. You're going to do one follow-up visit. Then you're going to take the order. You're going to put the order in. There's a chain of events that has to happen, steps of service. And I think where a lot of places fail and what makes more successful places more successful is not the experience, not the steps of service that people are going through, but the way that they're made to feel while they're there. If you look at me, smile at me, talk to me, if you make somebody feel valued, if you do more than go, when you were working on your house, you would come in and often eat by yourself. And I think that the words we choose sometimes, if you're greeted, the person who comes in to eat lunch alone with, "Hi, just you," kind of makes you feel more like, yep, just me. Couldn't find anybody to eat lunch with me today, so here I am. But if you said, "Will anybody be joining you today?" And you said, no, it's just me today. Okay, great, sir, right this way. And if I bring you a magazine or something to keep you busy while you're sitting there waiting for your food, just one little thing, if you can take one little thing and find 100 of them, you're going to make a huge difference in exceeding somebody's expectation. And I think that's what really sets places that are successful apart more so than others, is those little pieces, those little attention to details to make somebody feel like you really value them. You know, if I'm at the restaurant, there's not a single table that I don't go to and touch. And by touch, I mean go and have a conversation and greet them. That's restaurant lingo, touching tables. But I'm going to go as the owner and tell you how much I value your business and tell you that I appreciate you being there today. And I'm not going to ask you if everything's okay, because I'm not shooting for okay. I'm going to ask you if everything is cooked perfectly for you. I'm going to ask you if your service is great today, if we're doing a great job taking care of you. I'm going to shake your hand and introduce myself if you've never been there before. I'm going to make sure that the servers are doing those things on a regular basis to build relationships. You know, it's when you started this podcast a minute ago, the gentleman who's running it came over there with one of those Hollywood style scene markers, a clacker. And I used to keep one of those in the restaurant and I would write my pre-shift notes on it. And this was at Cheeburger. And because I always wanted to emphasize the you're on stage mentality. You are not here to just take an order. A drunk monkey could go to a table and take an order and go ring it in and get people food and say bye. But you're here to provide an experience. And we used to actually start our meetings. I'd write down all my meeting notes on that one of those Hollywood clacker scene marker type things just to read. And they thought it was cheesy, and it was cheesy. I'm not going to lie about it. But it emphasized that point that we were trying to get over every day. You're on stage. You are part of an experience that somebody's having. You're not just an order taker. We're not here just to push people through the door, get them in, feed them, and push them back out. We want them to leave feeling good about where they just ate. And I think that culture is more important. I'm not a big rules guy, never have been. I'm more of a rebel. You probably see that in my personality. I don't work well for other people in that if they don't maintain that style, that philosophy about the importance of culture and the experience, it'll make or break a company, yeah. A restaurant, what a church, it doesn't matter.
Well, you hit a lot of things there, and I'm going to go back and catch a few of those. You know, we don't always think about and don't always remember what somebody said, what somebody did, but we do remember how they made us feel. And the other thing that you hit on is words do matter, you know, and the things that you say to a customer, and in our sense would be maybe a guest, and how you respond to those guests affect everything about their stay. You know, I read a post not too long ago. It was someone was staying at their property, and they saw a spider. You know, it's like we get that we're out in the middle of the woods, and you know, everybody sees a brown recluse. I mean, it's automatically a copperhead and a brown recluse. You know, it's just, if it's a snake, it's poisonous, and if it's a spider, it's and I don't care if it's granddaddy long legs. But they replied with, "We just sprayed," or "We just had you know, chemicals applied." You know, and I don't know if you knew it or not, but I used to work for Ecolab back in the day. So, you know, Ecolab does a lot of different things in the service industry, and they're revolving around pest elimination and then dishes and soaps and mats and all those things that, you know, keep businesses going. But you just heard me say, you know, I didn't say pest control. I said pest elimination. There was nowhere on the vehicles that we drove that said pest. You know, you'd never know what that vehicle was if it was pulled up in front of a restaurant at night, unless you just knew Ecolab. But we didn't spray chemicals. We applied product, you know, and you going back to how you approach that guest and, or, you know, just you today, or, you know, do you have anyone else coming? You know, that's huge in how somebody's feeling. That might be their worst day and they're coming in there by themselves. And you know, I think we can approach our guests the same way when we're, you know, dealing with a tenant at a short-term rental. The experience starts and ends well before they come to your property and well after they leave. It's the follow-up, the touches, and that's what's impressed me about you the most is, you know, you go in there and you speak to these customers and you take the time to learn their names, and not just you. If I go in there, the servers know my name as well. And as soon as I walk in the door, it's, "Hey, Mike." And that's what keeps people coming back. I mean, you know, your food's great, but you could have mediocre food but have a wonderful atmosphere and people will keep coming back. But if you have mediocre food and a horrible atmosphere, if you have a mediocre stay, a mediocre house, and an amazing experience, I'm more likely to come back and visit versus if you have that mediocre house and the touch with the host was horrible and they were hateful and rude. You know, that's it applies across all industries, but that's huge in using your words wisely and choosing what to say.
I think Chick-fil-A, I think everybody knows if you say thank you and you're greeted with my pleasure, you know that's a Chick-fil-A-ism. And I think that's a company that's done an outstanding job building a reputation for customer service excellence. Disney is another customer. There's a company that also has that reputation. I'll share it with everybody else. When the housing market crashed in 2008 and the BP oil spill was out there and they were still picking up tar balls on the beach, my wife and I were looking to try and find something for ourselves, just for personal use. And we bought a condo down on Perdido Key. And after my HOA fees started going up more and more, thought, well, maybe we can make some money off this thing. So we did the Airbnb thing for a while. And it was definitely a learning experience. But one thing that I think that helped us is when we put together our initial description of the property, I said, this isn't your typical investment rental property. You're not going to find elevators and granite floors. This is a place that's a second home for us. You're going to see our books and personal belongings in the bottom drawer in the bedroom. And it's going to feel more like you're staying at your cousin's house than a upscale rental property. And it wasn't upscale. It was a stick building that was built in, I think, 1985. It showed some wear. But I let everybody know that right out of the gate. But then we still had folded towels and, did the toilet paper in a little point and, you know, did all the little extra type goodies that you would find in one of your places or on a cruise ship. You know, everybody's always amazed that you can fold a towel 8 different ways in the same day when they see, how do they know I'm not in my room? They're sneaking in here and they're rearranging stuff and doing it. But those little things that make people go, wow. So I think exceeding expectation is a huge thing, particularly.
Well, setting expectations on the front end. And then exceeding those expectations is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's use my restaurant for an example. I think we've got really good food. Now, we're not going to get a Michelin star. We're not putting that kind of food out. We've got burgers and we've got salads and we've got tacos and we've got, you know, a giant variety of stuff. But we're not trying to do braised short ribs and, you know, and duck liver and fancy stuff. Now, where we are, obviously, it's along the river. It's an old building that used to be a grocery store. If I put candles and white linen and had everybody wearing tuxedos, I'd be living on 1.5 and 2-star reviews. People aren't expecting to have a 5-course meal when they walk in the door. I think the perception of where we are is more of a roadside. I hate to use the word, but it's been circulated before. Great food for a roadside dive. And we weren't shooting for that. It's more of, I think it has more of that Florida oyster house kind of feel to it. They're very laid back. It's an anomaly in this business because I rarely ever get a complaint. And I think a lot of that has to do, obviously service is a huge factor in it, but the vibe, the feel, the expectation, I think is really a predecessor or a precursor or whatever the right word is, to that whole experience as a whole. People are more shocked by the level of service, and we've got some really good food as well. But I don't think that's the expectation when you first walk in the door. We're not dirty. We're not dingy. I just got one of the worst health inspections we've had in the 5 years, and it was a 98. Because, you know, we rolled 600s in a row, which... that's just constant follow-up. That's going in there and checking personally things every day. And then last time we got a 99 and this time we got a 98. But so it's not that we're dirty or, you know, somebody's not going to expect that and our crew looks bad because, you know, our crew looks great. But I think just the location and the casual atmosphere, having that in combination with some really good food exceeds that expectation. And I think that's really important, particularly in any business. If you give the guest more than they're expecting, you've got that wow factor. And that wow factor if I stay at a Airbnb or a rental property or eat at a restaurant or go to Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever, and I get service that is beyond what I expected, I'm going to tell you about it, because we talk about these kind of things. That's one of the things in our relationship. We're discussing, we're critiquing, we're trying to improve ourselves. We're trying to share things that, you know, if I find a good place to, I don't know, there's a, you're in the home business and you buy tools, or if I see a great deal somewhere, I'm like, hey, Mike, you know, they got this Ryobi saw over here. It's $99. It's usually $300. Or the service was amazing at this place. Do you go to Lowe's or do you go to Home Depot? I'm sharing it, you know, and the same is true for a bad experience. You're going to share it. You're going to tell your friends, man, don't go there. This place is a mess and the owner's got a terrible attitude. You exceed expectations. People talk about it. And word of mouth is the absolute best advertising, particularly in my business.
Want to know our best kept hosting secrets? They're all inside our SDR must-haves master list, our secret weapon that continues to transform ordinary host into extraordinary host. The must-haves master list is a checklist that we've been perfecting for over 12 years. Picture this: your guest checks in to your short-term rental and they're instantly wowed by the thoughtful touches and impeccable amenities. Why? Because you've got the TFE must-have master list by your side. This checklist has all the insider secrets that even the best host didn't know they were missing. We challenge you to take the checklist into your property today. See how many items you can mark off of this list. You didn't get them all? No worries. This is your chance to level up. So go to hostchecklist.com and grab your free copy. That's hostchecklist.com to download our coveted checklist today.
Well, I think it's the same way with us. I mean, you know, we've created these experiences and these short-term rentals that are shareable, Instagrammable, TikTokable, however you want to say it. You talk about the vibe, and your employees, your servers, they put off the same vibe. They have that energy. In the short-term rental world, our energy a lot of times is focused on the turnover teams, the cleaners, and the inspectors. You know, we're sending out a cleaning team, and then we're sending out an inspector to check behind that cleaning team to make sure that nothing was missed. How do you convey that vibe, that culture, to a new hire, to your employees, and to put out the feel that you're wanting felt?
It's difficult, honestly. And one thing, like for you said, new hires, my turnover is relatively low. I'm one of the fortunate ones in this business, because if you're online, if you're in these different restaurant groups like I am, you'll see that everybody's asking those questions like, how can I find people? It's just so hard and nobody cares today and everybody's got a terrible attitude and we're having to pay so much more than we were pre-COVID, you know, pre-2020, which is true. The wages are, I'm paying probably, well, I don't have anybody making less than double minimum wage in the back of the house. And my servers make great bank because of customers like you that come in and take care of them. So when I do get a new hire, it's very difficult. I've got 20, I think 26 or 27 people on staff right now. We're a family, you know, we take care of each other. And to come into, it's like being adopted in your 20s or something, you know, to go into a new family and build those relationships out of the gate is probably really difficult in my restaurant. But I think once you've established culture in whatever you're doing, people pick up on it easily. It's if you were in a situation where the culture was terrible, to change that culture does not happen overnight. That's a year to 5 year process in most companies to change how we operate, our principles, our morals, our standards, our ethics. Not the rules, because you can change rules. Nobody likes rules. People don't care about rules. When I have a new person come in, it's easier for them to go into a situation where we've already established what our value systems are when it comes to taking care of customers, and they pick up on it, and you don't want to be that person. You know what I'm saying? Because most people know, you know, if you got a good attitude in the morning when you got out of bed, or if you've got a bad attitude, you know it. But we all push each other to help each other. Somebody starts falling behind, we're team. You get somebody to help you. Don't crash. It's easy to crash in a restaurant business sometimes. You're getting your butts kicked. Somebody couldn't make it to work. They had a flat tire in the driveway. They don't know how to change the tire. Things happen, especially when you're dealing with, you know, 20, 25, 28, 30 different personalities. But once you've established that your belief system in the restaurant, it makes it easier for somebody to slide in. But you have to establish it. You have to ask yourself those questions. How am I going to handle an upset customer? How do I handle somebody that's just a bitchy person? How do you handle these different situations? What's my value system? And it's not always easy, because sometimes people are mean.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times we end up with similar situations. You know, it's different equipment, it's different people, but it's similar situations. You know, the pump on the hot tub goes out. They forgot to put the s'mores kit out. They had a flat tire coming to work, or forgot they had to clean today. And then you're scrambling to clean a unit, you know, at check-in time. And, how does that guest feel about it? How did you make them feel about it? Are you sympathetic to their need? And how are you responding to that?
Right. It's sometimes I have to get myself in check. Sometimes I have to walk myself to the back and have a conversation with myself. Honestly, if you get I think anybody who deals in customer service on a regular basis is going to have those days where you're just like, okay, count to three, Charlie. You know, get it. Don't let it come up. Once it comes out of your mouth, you can't pull it back in. I'll share an experience that I had with you with my place in Florida. More related directly to the listeners here. I had a couple check in, and I was unaware of it, but the garbage disposal was broke by from the previous people who had rented the place. And they had left some food in there and it stunk. And so the guy was very upset. And this is unacceptable. It's going to need, mind you, this was not a fancy place. Okay. I said, well, let me see what I can do, and I'll get right back with you. And I called the maintenance guy, and this is on a Monday, and the maintenance guy wasn't going to be able to get there until Wednesday, and he was going to replace it. Okay, that's fine. And then Wednesday comes along, and it wasn't fine because he didn't want the maintenance guy to be there while they were at the beach, because all of their personal belongings were there, and he didn't trust the maintenance guy. And then since we couldn't run the dishwasher because it was all tied in with the disposal some way or another, they were going to have to hand wash the dishes, and that was not going to be acceptable because his wife has something where they can't eat out because of her allergies. She has to prepare everything at home, and now she's upset because she's having to do a ridiculous amount of dishes, and they want me to comp there 5 days for free. I promise you, I probably handled it terribly because I was like, well, that ain't going to happen, you know, and in hindsight, there's probably a million ways that I could have done it better. But what I've learned in the restaurant business is you can't win an argument with a customer. And if you've got to swallow your pride once in a while and say, you're right, if I were in your situation, I would feel the same way. How can I make this up to you? Then you're going to win. If somebody eats all their food and then says, well, the burger was kind of dry, I'm not going to charge them for it. And they're going to feel like they got one, and they're going to come back, and they're going to bring people, and they're going to spend more money. And at the end of the day, while it might be difficult sometimes in those situations to take that high road, because you want to just say, well, you ate the whole thing, yeah, you don't win. You can't win in that situation. So you just, you do what's best for the business, and you do what's going to let you sleep good at night knowing you did the right thing.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's okay to be right and still give in. You know, it's to argue to a fault, that you're right and the customer's wrong. It's a lose-lose. And like you say,
like arguing with your wife.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather give away a $15 burger and fry than to lose a customer for life. You know, what's the lifetime value of that customer?
Oh, a lot. You know, your average consumer frequents about 5 restaurants on a rotating basis. And it's hard to get one of those. And if you get in that rotation, you don't want to lose that. In my business, also on that same note, I think it's a knee-jerk reaction a lot of times for servers, if something's not perfect, to go, hey, can I take that off their bill? And 90% of the time, more than that, customers don't want something for free, but if you give them something extra, then you win. So what I've found is, it took a little longer than it should have for table 4's fries to come out. Can I can I take them off their check? No, I still want their $5, $4.50, whatever it is for an order of fries, but I will go to the table. I will apologize, say, hey, I'm not sure what happened, but it was unacceptable. Would you guys mind if I bought you a dessert to share? So I can put out a dessert that might cost me $3.50 and still collect the $5 for the fries, apologize with sincerity, give them something they weren't expected, and I promise they're happier that way and feel better about the experience they just had rather than for somebody to go, hey, we took that off your check. Sorry about that. Yeah. You know, it's all in how you do it and how you make people feel.
Let's talk a little bit about the new build, the new restaurant, and how you're going to set that up. So it's in an up-and-coming neighborhood. It's in an up-and-coming area. It's speculative, but, you know, I feel you have that experience, and I feel like you have the history with your customers that a lot of that will drag over. A lot of the customers that I've had in the past will drag over. But how will you go in and set this up to make it exceptional and stand out? Talk a little bit about 95-5 and the 95-5 rule and how that will apply to this new building.
Well, there's I think first off, the most important thing is the team that we create. It's being selective. And a lot of times in hiring situations, the same basic questions are put out there. Tell me about something that you liked about your last employer. Tell me what you hated about your last employer. Tell me an accomplishment in life that you're the most proud of. What are your goals? Where do you want to be 5 years from now? And I really, honestly, I don't use any of those questions when I'm interviewing people. I'm more, I'll ask silly questions. And I actually read this one. I haven't asked this one, but I liked it. Are you a Miracle Whip or a mayonnaise person? What does that have to do with anything? But I think what's important is getting to know somebody and getting to know what their personality is like. Do they have a sense of humor? How do they handle stress? Not all those regular canned interview questions that you're going to read in a book from 1972. It's not 1972 anymore.
Well, I think that before we were talking yesterday about, you know, I've applied for a lot of jobs and had a lot of different jobs over the years, all jobs that I was able to work night shift and then build my construction business during the day. And, you know, one of those was the railroad. Ecolab was one where they do the Enneagram test. And, you know, they're asking you 100 questions, and it might be the same question worded three different ways. Rate yourself on a 1 to 5. And, you know, I didn't get hired at a lot of those jobs. I'm like, man, I'm so qualified. But it was my personality. It was the personality that didn't fit for that job. And when you say, are you Miracle Whip or mayonnaise? You know, I'd be the interviewee that would say mayonnaise, and, you know, because I probably would, you know, but you're wanting the guy or the lady that's going to laugh and say, well, I like mayonnaise, or I like Miracle Whip and mayonnaise, you know, and elaborate a little bit, because then you've seen that you've got somebody that's outgoing and a little more assertive, but I'm timid, and I'm going to say, yeah, mayonnaise.
So, right. Well, and I wouldn't hire you.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm not a good hire. A server. Yeah.
Yeah, no, because you've got to have that extroverted personality to be a successful server. And not so much in the kitchen. You know, the kitchen is a whole different ball of wax now.
So know what you're looking for and go after it. Don't settle just for a warm body, especially nowadays, because it's hard to find good people. It is.
Well, you know, the old saying, as long as they'll fog a mirror, we'll put them in the kitchen. It's a different world right now, particularly in the back of the house. Our servers make some really good bank. And so that helps with a positive attitude when you know you're going to make really good money that day. And when you're getting your butt kicked for hours at a time. I mean, this past week of Father's Day was just a madhouse, man. But it was fun. I love it when it gets like that. Now, I hate to come in at like 4 o'clock and walk into it. I'd rather work all day and night than show up at 4 o'clock in the middle of it when it's just busy. But the kitchen staff, number one, you got to pay well. And I pay well. If you ask anybody that's working for me in the kitchen, they're like, Charlie takes care of us. And I think it's really, people want even more than money. This is proven. People want to be recognized for their performance. They want their input to be valued, and they want to feel ownership with you. And while I do pay well, statistically, that is not the number one motivator for people. You can't throw an extra $5 an hour at somebody and expect their performance to get better. But what you can do is try and figure out how to bring out the best in everybody. And you can't browbeat, you know, the beatings will continue until the morale improves. That's 70s, 80s stuff. It doesn't work. Fear and intimidation is no way to run a business anymore. You've got to be involved with people. You've got to take care of people. Hey, how's your wife? You told me that she had to go to a doctor's visit. She had some concerns. Is everything okay? Hey, I noticed that you've been getting dropped off at work 5 times this week. What's up with your car? You know, so the, do I need to spot you $300 and we'll do it or whatever? You know, I mean, and I'm not advocating everybody just goes out and loans their people money, but you've got to take care of the people that are taking care of you. And when you invest in people like that, it pays itself back, not just in life. Hell, tell the girl at the grocery store that she looks nice with her new hairdo that you noticed she got. What's it going to hurt? Nothing. You're going to make somebody's day. Make it your job to make somebody feel good every day, every time that you go out.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And that goes back to, you talk about the employees want acknowledgement. And I think that's with a troubled guest sometimes. Sometimes that's all they want is to be acknowledged and to for you to understand that they had a bad experience. They might not want anything from it, but, you know, and I'm that way. Sometimes if I go somewhere and I have a bad experience, you know, when I was in my 20s, man, I was horrible. I was a horrible guest at a restaurant. If I was the guy that ate it all and then complained about it. But looking back, I'm like, you know, now I don't say anything, or if I feel like it was, they left me feeling a bad way, you know, I might tell the manager, hey, this happened. You know, I don't need anything, but I want you to be aware of it. And that doesn't happen very often. But back to the new restaurant. What are you going to do? Yeah.
Well, I think again, there's not there's got to be 100 different things that are going to separate us. First off, it's going to be really cool. You're doing the build out on it. I got faith in you that for everybody that doesn't know, it's going to be in a shipping container model. With a beer garden courtyard in the middle, and then there's going to be another open container on the other side. It's going to bring something to that area. To Chattanooga, there's nothing like it anywhere. And so I think so that gives us a big jump forward right out of the gate, because my restaurant that I have now does have a good reputation. You're active in the community where it's going to be. You know a lot of people. I know a lot of people. And we're going to have pizza. And you and I talked about this the other day. Several times, pizza is chicken salad. Everybody's got their own favorite kind. So we can't be everything to everybody, but what we're going to do is have a really good pie and some really good service. And I think once we get people in the door and we do the little things like looking them in the eye and shaking their hand and thanking them for their business, or calling back 2 hours after they came and picked up their order and say, hey, I just wanted to make sure that you enjoyed your pizza tonight. We hope it lived, you know, that it was met your expectations, exceeded your expectations, that your family enjoyed it, whatever. Doing those little things beyond what most other people are doing.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the way reflecting that to short-term rental hosts, you know, it's the follow-up with the guest. Hey, we hope you enjoyed your stay. Hey, you know, is there anything we can do for you while you're in Chattanooga? What brings you to Chattanooga? Is there anything we can do to accommodate your stay? All those little things. And, you know, when we're building these short-term rentals, and I never thought about it, like the 95-5 rule until I heard it in the book, but, you know, 95% of the build is just to the T, online, on budget. And then there's those 5% of things that we're just going to do stupid stuff. I mean, stupid spins, you know, we're buying hot tub, and you know, it's not stupid, but we're buying hot tubs. We're buying pizza ovens or a sauna. You know, all the
pizza oven thing. And I thought that was really cool because I don't know if it was something that you shared or you were tagged in it on Facebook, but it was one of your guests and they were out there cooking pizza. I was like, Mike's got pizza oven at his place.
Yeah, That's cool. You know, that's $300. You know, I think they were $179 when we bought them, but now they've gotten popular. And, but you know, we were trying, I saw that on Black Friday. I was like, man, we need one of those at each unit. I mean, how cool is that?
Right.
So we throw that in.
Ready crusts in the refrigerator and stuff for them.
So we have that as an add-on. They can add on a pizza kit. They can add on wine. They can add on beer, the chocolates, the anniversary package, any of those packages that will help them with their stay. and make that a more memorable experience. I think, and that's the experience that we want to give our guests. You know, we have guests that come and get engaged. We've had elopements, all kinds of different ceremonies, announcements, whatever you want to have. We've probably had it at those properties, and that's because of the experience that was created for the guest. So,
well, you know, in the book that you turned me on to, which I loved, and then Setting the Table is the other owner of that restaurant, and it's a great book too. You got to check it out. One of the things that they were doing when people were making reservations is they'd find out those things. Is it a special event? What brings you to the making your reservation with us today? Because now this place was, I don't know, I think it was about $180 to eat there, and it's about a 3 or 4 hour experience that this guy was running, and it became the number one rated restaurant in the world. But if there was something, if it was an anniversary, they had, remember the Dreamweavers, which were people hired specifically to think outside of the box and make the customers visit something that would just blow their minds. There was a guy, I think he was around a 500-600 pound man, and they knew that the chair was probably not comfortable for him, but he ate there twice a week. And so they contacted his wife behind his back, had her send them a picture of his favorite chair at home, and went and had it built, had a reproduction of this chair that they would pull out when he came in. Tell me that's not just going the extra mile for service. Or they, you go out to a fancy restaurant with your wife, you walk up, there's a desk where they've got their monitor and their logbook for your reservation. Yeah, it's Hicks, party of two for 7:30. Okay, Mr. Hicks, right this way. But these people went farther. This would be really incredibly difficult to do, but they pulled it off. I don't even know how. But they were Facebook, you know, social media stalking their guests. And so when you walked in, they knew what you looked like. Hello, Mr. Hicks. We've been expecting you. How cool is that?
You know, and I've heard of short-term rental owners. Again, difficult to do. And I don't, you know, for us, it's not worth going to do, but I've heard of short-term rental owners, you know, doing the same thing, stalking on social media. I mean, down to the type of music, and then that music is playing when they come into the unit. You know, it's just creating that extra feel and going the extra mile and creating that extra special piece that makes it something they won't forget.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, whenever my wife and I travel, and especially like just local, you know, we're in Chattanooga, but we'll go to Nashville once in a while for a weekend, or go to Atlanta or somewhere. We don't do hotels anymore. We're straight up Airbnb people. We'll go find something, a deal close to where we're going to be. If we're going to go out and have cocktails, we Uber from the Airbnb. But only one time has anybody called about 2 hours after checking. And I imagine everybody knows now because they've got the keyless door pads, and you can tell when your guests are coming in or going out, or you've got the blink or the ring or whatever on your front porch. But they called and said, hey, this is so-and-so, the property, blah, blah, blah. We just wanted to make sure everything met your expectation and that you're all set and good to go. And I was like, huh, no, we do this a lot. That's the first and only time that that's ever happened. And I was impressed by it. And I will remember them. And it's a guy that when you clicked on his other properties on the link, he's got a property in New York, he's got properties here and there, and I've bookmarked it, saved it, whatever, and I'll definitely stay with him if I'm somewhere else, just because of that one thing that's never happened for me personally. And maybe some people might think it's intrusive, they don't want to be bothered, they're on vacation, but from a customer service perspective, I thought, yeah, this guy's got it going on, knows how to take care of his guests.
What's the one thing that you can do that will make you stand out? And like you said earlier, you know, you're looking for 100 things. 100 little things that will make you stand out. So, man, Charlie, I appreciate you coming on. This has been a blast. I know that the listeners will get a ton of information from this, and easily relatable to short-term rentals. Customer service goes across all boards. How do we find you?
I am on Suck Creek Road. Yes, just like it sounds, S-U-C-K. It's 1925 Suck Creek Road in Chattanooga, just at the foot of Signal Mountain along the Tennessee River. The place is called River Drifters. It's River Drifters Chat, chatt.com.
All right. You're on Instagram as well?
Instagram and Facebook both. Yep.
All right. All right. So if you got any questions for Charlie, want to reach out and hit him up, come and have the best burger in Chattanooga, come on down and see him.
Absolutely, man. Sounds good. Mike, thanks for having me, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for additional information about today's episode. And please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week. Wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us, it's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.